newspaperman meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where veteran editors give you some insight into newsroom decision making and where we talk about some of the ethical issues that confront journalists every day. And we welcome you. I'm Rex Smith of the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union, here with my colleagues, Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady, and Barbara Lombardo, who was formerly editor of the Saratogian and the Record in Troy. Y'all okay?
This show is a little bit like the daily newspaper. You do it every day. We don't do it every day, but day after day.
Are you saying that I'm sounding repetitive?
Week after week. It never ends. And the great thing about the newspaper, the news business, you never run out of news.
That's
just like
true.
We do
There's
here.
Always
never run
a story.
Out.
And you always have to hit your deadline. You know, the old saying, go with what you've got, being that great journalism axiom that you may not have a complete story, but you've got a story because you've got a deadline.
And there are a thousand ways to write a lead. Just pick one and go with it.
Even the headlines, which we hardly ever talk about the headlines for stories, and you have a headline, whether it's in the print edition, if anybody's still getting that, or the digital edition, or online on the website, or you're listening to the lead-in of a story on broadcast, it's a summary of the news to get you into the story, and those are important choices.
Significantly important, because so many people don't get beyond the headline, or at least don't get beyond the third paragraph of the story.
So let's get beyond the headline.
Okay, let's get to something that's important here. By gosh, absolutely. One of the key things that we need to talk about is the ongoing effort by the Trump administration to, let's say, in our interpretation, to intimidate reporters by going after them, by demanding, in fact, by subpoenaing them. We had this happen just a couple of weeks ago. It remains a contentious issue in court as we speak. There will probably be something happening between the time that we record this show and the time that you listen to it. But the Justice Department actually went after New York Times reporters, knocked on their door, delivering subpoenas. Now it turns out that they actually even went after reporters and relatives' phone records to identify how the New York Times found out that the new Air Force One, the gift of the gutter government, was not in fact up to snuff in terms of security. So this is an ongoing issue, and it's interesting. Let's listen to one of the reporters who was on that story, Maggie Haberman, the noted New York Times correspondent in the White House. Let's listen to how she identifies some of the issues here.
The thing that's remarkable about these subpoenas, Joe, and we know this, we've discussed this before, there are other presidents who have subpoenaed journalists. The Biden administration actually stopped doing that, and Trump obviously is doing it again with vigor, and this has been related to his bullying campaigns of various industries that we do get into in depth in the book. In this case, the subpoenas were not a last resort, which is typically what they're supposed to do when there is an alleged leak hunt. This time it came within 48 hours of the first story being published, and less than that of the one about his plane not being fully equipped the way the current Air Force, real Air Force Ones are, the ones that were commissioned by the military. You are correct. This was something that was quite known in Washington. It was not a surprise. And the reason that the reporters were looking at the fact that he was flying a different plane was because he posted a Truth Social comment about it, about how he was taking the old one for old time's sake, which was a little hard to believe. This is not just issuing subpoenas, it's sending federal agents to people's homes, as you said. The goal is very clearly intimidation.
That's Maggie Haberman of the New York Times.
She was on Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough.
That Joe, yes, absolutely. Great to hear. And so the question becomes how, there are several questions that arise from this, but one is reporters in less volatile situations in covering the White House will often have different kinds of intimidation thrown at them. But surely when your very freedom is at stake, when failure to disclose your source could well lead to a judge ordering you to be locked up or to be fined, the stakes are very high. And so I think it would be very hard for a reporter to withstand that. And to it's hard for a news organization that doesn't have the resources of the New York Times to withstand that. We who have been editors of community news organizations, smaller organizations certainly without the resources of the New York Times, would have to say that this is an extraordinary bit of pressure for the White House to apply.
Yeah, we tend to think of reporters as tough. They almost enjoy being intimidated. It's a badge of honor. But when push comes to shove, and when you're talking about going to jail, it's a whole different thing. And what we're finding out now about these subpoenas is they actually go before the actual story. They go back months, which indicates to me that this is about far more than the reporting on an airplane. This is about trying to find out the sources of working reporters in a way that is incredibly monstrous from the, what did you call it, the gutter government?
Gutter, actually.
Is that a new thing for you?
No. I had an old friend, elderly friend, who worked in the area who said that is actually how they pronounce it, gutter, not.
And how do we pronounce it here?
How do we pronounce it?
We're never sure. Qatar?
We know. Yeah, Qatar. Yeah, whatever.
That's who we're talking about.
Gutter Force One, anyway.
See, this is really troubling. And they're not only going after the reporters, but they're going after the records, the phone records of their of a parent who's a professional healthcare professional. So there could be unlimited number of contacts in those phone lists that should not be available to anybody other than the person who owns that phone. The relatives, the spouses of those reporters are being subpoenaed. And again, they have jobs and lives that have that very likely have people's phone contacts and text messages that the government has no business having access to. So that's troubling on top of this.
And for anyone who wanted to leak information to a reporter about something they really cared about or an important issue, they are going to see these stories and they are definitely going to think twice.
Well, Rex, that's the plan.
Rex, you've talked about how some of your reporters used to go to phone booths and use different ways of communicating with sources. Not everybody has that level of expertise. At the national level, I can see that happening. At the local level, this is going to be a real problem.
What's the status now of the journalist who's being fined $800 a day for not revealing
sources?
She is
Catherine Herridge, Fox News and CBS, now independent, is officially being fined $800 a day. I think that her lawyers have managed to get a stay on that temporarily. She's not actually, but that there is actually a court order that has rejected her contention that's improper. And I don't see how she's going to avoid having to pay those fines.
Yeah, and how that is going to be repeated at all over the country at different levels. That's frightening. That could definitely have a chilling effect because there's a limit to what you can afford to protest.
Well, and it does go to all kinds of issues. There was an interesting interview in Columbia Journalism Review this week of Celine Gunder, who is CBS News, and she's been reporting about the parasite that now is reaching so many, Cyclospora. It's reaching so many corners of the country. And she has found it very difficult to get information from the federal government on this, from the CDC, from the FDA. In part, because of the centralizing of media relations. And we've talked about this in the past on this show, even in state government, the fact that now everybody wants to channel all the press inquiries. They don't want anybody to be talking to reporters. And she's pointing out that now CDC, FDA, and all the government agencies have centralized through the Department of Health and Human Services, where she says it's basically two people who respond to everything. Imagine that, around the country, all these reporters who are trying to get information about public health. Cyclospora is significant, and there are no people, there aren't just enough people to answer the questions.
And not only that, but the people in government are not there anymore to do those kind of investigations. And this is the reporter you're referring to that wrote, forgot now where that appeared, but her article raises a lot of concerns showing that not only aren't there people to do the PR, the public information officers, but because of cuts in the government, there's nobody even monitoring that
Cyclospora.
Like Cyclospora. It's not even being monitored to the extent that it had been before, so that there isn't even anybody to tell you that it's a problem.
You used to be able to, government used to justify its actions by saying, at least we have this one person who will be able to answer all your questions. And even though that person usually had to turn to an expert in the department to find out the answer and then relay it to you, possibly getting it wrong in the meantime, now they're not having the centralized public information officer available. They're downsizing those offices. And so there's nowhere for reporters to turn to. And you've got everybody in government afraid to talk. That is nothing new. I think I've encountered that even at the village and town level. People they don't want their name in the paper. They don't want to be the one supplying the information because they're worried they're going to get in trouble. But at least there used to be a framework where you could get the information. It seems like in this case, which is a public health emergency, you would have that information available.
What officials sometimes fail to understand is that in the absence of authoritative information, bad information supplants it. And this is why so much garbage gets out. It's one of the reasons why so much garbage gets out on the internet, because the authoritative sources have stepped away from their responsibility. And they're not providing the response to responsible journalists who are trying to get public health information. It is giving license to the online trolls who are giving you all kinds of ridiculous information.
Yeah, I give a plug to PolitiFact, which is doing an excellent job trying to provide. And it's free. Anybody can go online and find it. And there's a large number of stories there and presented in a very nice Q&A format. So they're not getting into the issues of, is the government covering this? Is the government reporting it? But reporting that what people really need to know for their own health and safety. But they still have to get that information from somewhere.
Of course, what they're doing is really useful, and that is they're trying to engage where public officials are stepping away. There was an interesting bit of information reported. KFF, which is a public health information agency or entity funded by the Kaiser Foundation, polling in 2024 found that people who use social media more frequently for health advice are more likely to believe false statements. So what's really important is well-informed information is the antidote to that. And that's what PolitiFact is trying to do. PolitiFact, which was formed to keep track of politicians dissembling, to keep on top of that, and it's won a Pulitzer Prize for that. Their fact-checking is really first rate, but they're now rolling out this new service you referred to, Barb, that provides credible, practical information on health.
Coming back to the Air Force One and the subpoenas, the issue that the public would be most interested about, aside from the news access to it and the subpoenas themselves. Is it true? Wouldn't you want to know if the president accepted a gift and is a passenger in a plane that is not adequately equipped to protect his life? And if, heaven forbid, something had actually happened and then it would have come out later after a terrible accident that, oh, it turns out that the president was in a rush to ride in the new toy, and why wasn't this revealed sooner?
People would be complaining about the media not doing its job. And imagine if you were the reporter who had a bit of the story and failed to report it. Oftentimes, I think people don't understand the motivation of reporters for doing a lot of this work. The digging isn't just because they're nosy. It's because they genuinely feel a sense of responsibility to get information to citizens who need it.
They're not trying to sell papers.
Yeah, that old saying.
I've heard it a thousand times, and that reporters, that's to our peril. A lot of times reporters didn't care about the business side of the newspaper, but seriously, they don't. They just want a good story. Oftentimes they want to get on the front page or at the top of the website. But
you want to expose a wrong.
Yeah.
You want to be a catalyst for positive change. You want to make things better by telling what the truth is.
That's important for people to understand that there is a motivation, and that motivation is to do something good for the community. I don't want to hear violins in the background here, but the fact is most journalists are not motivated by trying to make a great deal of money. Most of us, if we had decided we wanted to get rich, would have gone into a different field, right? And so the motivation is actually to try to make a difference. And so when you can't get the information, when you can't give people the information they need, you are feeling as though you're doing something improper, that you're not fulfilling your responsibility, your mission. And I would think that would be especially troubling these days to, for example, Pentagon correspondents who are facing unprecedented obstacles to trying to get information, being thrown out of the Pentagon, being new rules being imposed where you can't even walk in the Pentagon without an escort officer who's probably hard to come by. And this is noteworthy. Brian Stelter of CNN has reported, has made note of the fact that the Pentagon hasn't held a press briefing in more than 2.5 months. Pete Hegseth, as Defense Secretary of War in the president's telling, hasn't explained the military strategy behind the renewed strikes. So we don't know. Finally, in fact, the word came out that belatedly, not by announcement of the Pentagon, that after this has been reported, that there were more injuries than anybody knew in the war in Iran. And Americans are really being kept in the dark about what's going on in Iran.
Yeah, this is just so wrong. When I've heard the casualty numbers, I've been thinking all these months and weeks that, oh, this war's going pretty good. We're not, at least that people are not being injured or killed from the American side. And then I find out, oh, no, there have been significant injuries. We just haven't been told about it. There's not a regular briefing. There are not regular updates to a website that tells us what's going on at all. The only way we're really getting solid information is digging from reporters, from sources, just like the government doesn't want. We're getting a lot of babble from the president, but it's all over the board, so we don't know what to believe and what not to believe.
It's worse than that, in fact, when you look at what's going on from Fox News and its ilk in the, let's say, the Pravda of the White House. All of those commentators who in March on Fox News were saying that the war is over, that Laura Ingraham, for example, on March 3rd, saying, we've already knocked out so much of their capability, it looks like this is just a wrap-up at this point. Greg Gutfeld on Fox saying, maybe there's just nobody who can declare surrender because they're dead. I don't know, but I don't see how this thing can continue much longer. This is early March now. And this kept going on Fox News, mimicking, echoing the president's words that we have taken them out. March 5th, Laura Ingraham said, Trump has already won in Iran. I'm wondering why there are no apologies from those commentators.
Are you really wondering?
It reminds me of this whole issue about what reporters should be doing when it comes to covering war and how the public perceives our role. What should we be doing? And what our perception of what a reporter should be doing and what maybe the people at home think. Where are the Ernie Pyles of modern journalism when it comes to covering this war? Where's Dan Rather from the Vietnam War?
Part of the problem is that the president is telling citizens that what reporters are doing is, in fact, unpatriotic. Actually, let's check this out. From May 15th, the president came back on Air Force One as he's coming home from China to a gaggle, the term for when the reporters gather around a politician. And he was talking to David Sanger, who is a White House and national security correspondent for The Times. Listen to what the president had to say.
What did it used to be of repeating the bombing? You did it for 38 days.
Well, no, we did.
And you did not get the political changes in Iran.
No, I had a total military victory. But the fake news, guys like you write incorrectly. You're a fake guy. And guys like you write about it incorrectly. We had a total military victory. We knocked out their entire Navy. We knocked out their entire Air Force. We knocked out all of their anti-aircraft weaponry. We knocked out all of their radar. We knocked out all of their leaders, number one. And then we knocked out all of their leaders in the second division. And we knocked out numerous of their leaders in the third division. And they're very confused. We've had a total victory, except by people like you that don't write them. You should write them. I actually think it's sort of treasonous what you write, but you and the New York Times and CNN, I would say, are the worst.
Right. Sir, I want to know that war.
You should know better, Dan. You know better. Your editors tell you what to write, and you write it. You should be ashamed of yourself.
There's another war. Is there any
I actually think it's treason.
To that, I think it's useful to hear the words of a Times spokesman who responded, reporting isn't treason. It's foundational to a free press and the work that America's founders wrote the First Amendment to protect. But when the president accuses reporters of treason. This almost gives license to millions of public officials around the country to similarly attack the media, and again gives rise to the sort of just diaspora of information, of misinformation, really, that is replacing good journalism around the country.
You just need to read Timothy Snyder's On Tyranny, a very slim book full of horrifying facts and warnings about when the leadership tells you not to believe in the media, that's a huge step toward fascism. And you don't hear enough people contradicting what he is saying.
You know, reporters in general are a patriotic lot, but they are not gung-ho supporters of one thing or another. They will cover the military when it does great things, and they will cover the military when it makes mistakes. That's how you keep institutions accountable. Should you wear a flag lapel pin when you're on the news? Should you wave a flag? We need to have some independence, some level of separation from the nationalism that kind of sweeps a movement or a war effort. Certainly in World War II, reporters supported the war effort in any way we could, but we needed also to report the true facts.
There's, for journalists and for any citizen, there is a given, I think, where you're raised to respect authority in a way, right? To respect authority, but not necessarily to accept authority without questioning it. And the public is served when authority is questioned, and that's part of what journalists must do.
Excellent put. If you're just joining us, by the way, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith. Barbara Lombardo was at Just Speaking. Judy Patrick before that, editors from upstate New York. By the way, we love to hear from you. media@wamc.org is how you can be in touch with us, media@wamc.org. And we have a little note from listeners, Matt and Cindy, who say they're avid listeners to the Media Project. And we had asked people last week, what do you think about broadcasting the president's remarks live, because this was an issue with the president's speech about election integrity a couple of weeks ago, which was aired live on Fox News and on CBS, not on ABC and CBS. Did NPR carry it live as well? And here is what Matt and Cindy said. They said, play the entire speech a few days after the event. The media can fact check and even have a commentary from analysts, including a bootlicking apologist. Okay.
We should note that the president criticized those networks that did not carry his speech live and suggested that the FCC should take a closer look at their operations. Totally inappropriate, totally wrong. We're in new territory here with the president. I predicted on last week's show that they would all carry it, so I have a little bit of egg on my face, but it was a tough decision. If anything, I'm a little bit more optimistic this week than I was last week, because they did show a little bit of spine in standing up and taking some caution about what they aired live.
And then if you followed up later to see what the Fox, they're not the news people, the opinion commentators and celebrity, whatever they are, they managed to avoid discussion of that.
For good reason, of course, because Fox News had to pay $787 million the last time they accepted and amplified the president's claims about the 2020 election, because they were found to have libeled companies who were involved in that election. So the Fox News stars basically, and they're still ducking it. What they have done, which is also egregious on the part of Fox News, not only do they report without questioning some of the ridiculous notions that come from the White House, but here now Fox News, when they face to this speech about the election security, they pretended that it actually hadn't happened. Laura Ingraham, Jesse Waters, both hardcore Trumpists, they didn't promote the speech. They didn't talk about it afterwards. Fox and Friends, which you know is the president's favorite program in the morning. The Five, which is the largest audience program on cable television. They have not dealt with this because the speech itself aired false information and repeated stuff that actually got Fox News in trouble 4 years ago.
Man, and it annoyed the president. It was not the landmark speech he was hoping for. And you have to wonder what this will mean for his oratory going further. I wish he'd do a primetime speech about the war in Iran, but that's just a pipe dream.
I feel the same way about that as I did about the speech about the voting, that there is not a justification for airing live an entire speech just because it's the president of the United States. But you need to be prepared. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to be prepared to cut in. You can be prepared with your own commentators and observers. And
what's great at this point is that because of technology, there's so many different channels available for every media source. That is, you can have an online presence where you do air it live, whereas your major channel, the broadcast element of a network, can keep up with regular programming.
Good point. I think that, mm-hmm. isn't that what NBC and ABC
yes.
did? That's a good solution.
Yeah, have it someplace. So there we are. By the way, if I earlier in the program accidentally referred to Maggie Haberman as having been subpoenaed, she was not one of the reporters who directly received subpoenas in the New York Times. She was one of the reporters whose byline was on that story. But it was only three reporters who were directly subpoenaed by the White House.
He just called her bad names.
He did. Yes, he does. Yes. So we're out of time, and we would welcome you folks to come back. We love to hear from you, and we hope that you'll join us again. Rex Smith here with Barbara Lombardo and Judy Patrick. Gratitude to our producer, Dave Gustina, and to you folks who join us each week here on The Media Project.
Such interesting people, when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette and former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.